You're very welcome back to The Late Debate. Well, it's been another day and another debate on Garda competence, Garda management and Garda reform. Joining me tonight in The Late Debate studio are John Redmond, General Secretary of the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors, John Mooney, Security Correspondent with The Sunday Times, and Mark Kelly, Director of the Irish Council of Civil Liberties. You're all very welcome. Well, the Geoghegan report into how allegations by the Garda whistleblower Maurice McCabe were handled by the Gardaí and the Department of Justice was debated in the Dáil this afternoon. The Geoghegan report, which was published last Friday, led to the resignation of Alan Shatter as Justice Minister last week. Today in the Dáil, Sinn Féin's Piers Doherty said that if there is a lesson to be learned in the Geoghegan report, it must be to ensure that Garda complainants who come forward are listened to and protected. And he gave details of another Garda officer who had come to him with complaints about colleagues in the Westmeath division.
Garda Keith Harrison claims that as a result of arresting a member of the drugs unit in Athlone for drunk driving, that Garda management maliciously set about targeting him, while the arrested Garda was afforded protection by the Garda management. He claims that a managerial review of his high work returns and practices was instigated, and persons that had past interactions with Garda Harrison in the execution of his duties were invited by the Gardaí to make complaints against him. He claims that during this period from September 2009 until March 2011, he was office-bound, while the Garda that he arrested, who had been found with a high concentration of alcohol, was still driving official vehicles and carrying an official firearm. Garda Harrison makes serious claims about how the drunk driving case was struck out of court on dubious rulings and how evidence relating to the case was stolen by a member of the Gardaí. He also claims that a member of the Gardaí of officer rank stationed in the Westmead division prevented successful prosecution of individuals in a number of cases. He says in his sworn affidavit, "I was once a well-respected, ambitious and unblemished member of an Garda Síochána. Through systematic and relentless bullying and intimidation and unmerited scrutiny, I have, in my view, been totally undermined and destroyed. My good name and that of my family has also been tarnished, and I now feel I have no option but to take this action. I feel I could not address this prior to now, as who was I to turn to, and have faith in them to do the right thing? Who would believe me over Garda management? Would I make an unbearable situation worse for myself by turning on the wolves that preyed on me? Never in my life have I felt so alone, tortured and disappointed. I have huge concerns about my future in an Garda Síochána and how much more is going to be thrown my way." Minister, it's important if we're to learn the lessons of the Geoghegan report that we make sure that any Garda who comes forward with whatever claims isn't subject to the bullying, harassment, intimidation that those that went before them were subject to.
That was Piers Doherty in the Dáil this afternoon, and Independent TD Claire Daly outlined a list of cases which she said had shown that there were serious systemic problems in the Gardaí.
I think we'd have to say that policing problems are not new. There have been horrific cases over the decades, well in advance of this government's lifetime. The 1984 murder of Patrick Nugent in Bunratty, believed to be at the hands of Gardaí and staged up as a car accident. The brutal death of 14-year-old Brian Rossiter in a Garda station in Tipperary. Nicky Kelly being fitted up for the train robbery. The Kerry Babies case, Abby Lara, Donegal. The repeated United Nations reports about the appalling policing scenario in Corrib, and on and on. I mean, who is the government trying to con, if you like, when we say that, you know, we didn't know about these things? We did know about these things.
Well, the new Minister for Justice, Frances Fitzgerald, acknowledged the problems that the Geoghegan report had highlighted, but she assured the Dáil that a transformed Garda Síochána was on the way.
The report contains deeply disturbing findings. It raises fundamental questions about the Garda Síochána, their investigation of criminal cases, and the responses to serious concerns raised about them. Garda management and oversight, basic policing procedures, and the role of bodies such as GSOC and the Department of Justice and Equality. Significant steps must be taken to deal with these issues. All of the issues which Mr. Geoghegan has found warrant further inquiry, including the individual allegations which have not been properly investigated, must be examined by the Commission of Investigation, which he recommends. But the wider systemic and historic problems revealed must also be tackled by a programme of significant reform. When I say significant reform, I mean that the oversight and governance of the Garda Síochána will be transformed with the establishment of an independent Garda Authority. The highest levels of legal support and protection will be given to Garda whistleblowers. The remit, strength and capacity of GSOC will be enhanced to enable the effective and independent examination of complaints. The filling of the post of Garda Commissioner will be by way of open competition, and a wide range of Garda management, operational and procedural issues will be examined by the independent and expert Garda Síochána Inspectorate.
That was the Minister for Justice, Francis Fitzgerald, in the Dáil this afternoon. John Redmond of the AGSI, what are your thoughts on what you heard from Pierce Doherty in the Dáil this afternoon? More allegations from so-called whistleblowers.
Yeah, well, I suppose without speaking about the individual case that Deputy Doherty made reference to, I suppose we're going to, and we certainly would expect the sergeants and inspectors listening to what has gone on, that there are going to be a number of whistleblowers will come forward now, and I suppose there's no doubt about that. And the question is, how are they going to be dealt with? And it's natural to expect it. It's natural that they're going to feel that the lid is off, Pandora's box has been opened, and I suppose in reality, who could fault anybody who has a concern or had a concern up to this from bringing it forward at this stage? The problem is, and the challenge is, where do you stop the historical ones? Where do you draw the line and then move on from a point in time? And that's a concern. But an even greater concern, I listened with interest to the last piece from the minister and her responses today and her statement today. And for the sergeants and inspectors that I represent in the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors, we're taken aback, to say the least, that the minister has granted the whistleblower confidential recipient status to GSOC. On a number of occasions, we have proposed that this would be a negative step to take, a bad step for members at sergeants and inspector rank, but probably all members.
Why do you say that?
Quite simply, for a couple of reasons, but the first one, very clearly, is that the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission was set up to investigate complaints against Gardaí. And now we have a situation where people who may have been investigated by GSOC are now expected to put their trust and turn and tell them their woes as whistleblowers or potential whistleblowers. And I don't think that's a runner as far as our members are concerned. And in fact, we did just a straw poll today, just in the short time we had from the minister's speech and now. And it was an email survey, if you like, and we got 67 responses about whether our members of sergeant and inspector rank would have confidence enough in reporting whistleblowing concerns. 66 said no, they would not, and one said he would or she would. Mm-hmm. So that's part of it. The second part, I mean, we would be expected to go and give information to whistleblowing or a whistleblower confidential recipient in GSOC in a situation where we don't know what happened regarding the bugging of the GSOC offices. The Cook report hasn't come in yet. Where would the information go if we gave such information to GSOC? You must remember that GSOC has very close ties with senior management in the Garda organisation, and they have to have. You remember and you will know that a superintendent from the Garda organisation, it used to be two, works with GSOC mm-hmm. full-time. So where would the information go if somebody wanted to remain anonymous, at least as far as possible?
Is it your understanding that giving GSOC that confidential recipient status, is that a permanent move or is it an interim move?
Well, I don't know, but the minister says she intends to change the legislation to allow GSOC. So you can only assume that it's going to be a permanent move. Now, I suppose the fact that she hasn't done it yet is something that leaves us time, I suppose, in the hope that we can meet the minister. And I saw a meeting today with the minister, and I don't know whether we're going to get to meet her or not. But I mean, we spent, not much point in talking about the previous minister, but we spent 15 months trying to meet with Minister Shatter. And he didn't want to meet us, and he didn't want to hear what we had to say. Now, sergeants and inspectors have a pivotal role to play in the organisation. They're the first-line supervisors and the front-line managers. So, and they have two very important roles. And one of them is to make sure that the people who report to them continue to do their job on a professional basis. And the other is to make sure that the public are satisfied with the level of service delivered.
Absolutely. Now, I just want to bring you in, Mark Kelly. Hmm. Do you agree with that position from the AGSI about giving GSOC the status of being a confidential recipient as well?
Well, firstly, I think it is going to happen really quite fast because the proposal is to do it within the protected disclosures legislation, which is currently before the Dáil, not to wait. I would sort of ask the question the other way around, because looking at the findings of the Guérin report, in fact, Sergeant Maurice McCabe implicitly was making complaints against members of An Garda Síochána up to and including the level of the Garda Commissioner. So the question I would be asking from a human rights perspective is it appropriate that the body that is charged with looking at complaints against Gardaí should be precluded from looking at a complaint because the complainant happens to be a serving member of An Garda? And I can see a certain rationale for doing it. Now, when we spoke yesterday in a session in the morning
before the Justice Committee,
there was quite a protracted exchange about this. And essentially, the ICCL's position is that we don't necessarily think that it's inappropriate as a matter of principle that GSOC has that role. But we certainly acknowledge that there's a trust deficit at the moment on the part of Garda members about the capacity of GSOC to take on that role. And so our view would be that there might be merit on a transitional basis in retaining some form of independent confidential recipient who would be the first point of contact for Garda members who wish to whistleblow. But if the essence of their complaint is effectively a complaint against serving members of An Garda Síochána, then I think ultimately those complaints do have to, in an appropriate way, be transmitted to and dealt with by GSOC.
It's not a fair point, John Redmond.
Well, it is, I suppose, but there's a couple of aspects to it. One is if you had a complaint in respect of an individual member or two members or three members of the Garda organisation, you might say, OK, you could see the logic in the minister saying, well, the Garda complaints, or sorry, the Ombudsman Commission investigate complaints against Gardaí, so why should it stop? You know, in some respects, we have sought the ability to make complaints against an individual. But let me just give you an example where there might be systemic failures in an area, and it mightn't be against an individual member or two members or three members of the Garda organisation. We'll take a Garda district or sub-district that might be running itself into the ground and there is no management or no on-hand management to it. And where would a person, we'll say, make a complaint about that? Because that's a management or a process or a procedures failure in the running of that station. Mm-hmm. And that is an issue and a live issue. I don't want to name the station, but that's something that's been on our agenda for about 5 years and we can't get anybody to look at it.
Mark.
Well, in a way, I think that raises a different issue. There was a lot that the minister said this afternoon that was welcome. But of the five main things in her speech that she characterised as reform, the one that's really troubling us still is that she referred to a wide range of Garda management, operational and procedural issues to be examined by the independent and expert Garda Síochána Inspectorate. And that would be picking up on the kind of systemic issues that John's referring to there. Now, the problem with that, and you heard it in the extract that you played from the minister, is that heavy emphasis is being put, you heard it in her voice, on this notion of the Garda Síochána Inspectorate being independent. But actually, the Garda Inspectorate is not independent. And you've only got to look, I mean, your listeners can Google the Garda Act 2005 very easily and have a look at section 1172, which describes how it operates. And it's a statutory creature of the minister. It can't move left, right or centre without the minister's consent. It reports only to the minister. It's paid by the Department of justice. And there's a suggestion somehow that work by the inspectorate to look at these systemic factors, management, operations, procedure, and also the investigation of serious crime, is somehow a response to Gurran that has been commissioned by the new minister. My understanding, and John might be able to confirm this, is that that simply isn't true, that part of what they're doing, they've been doing for nearly a year by virtue of the Haddington Road Agreement, Appendix 3 to the Haddington Road Agreement. And the other bit, it was clear from the evidence that the inspectorate gave to the Justice Committee yesterday afternoon, is also an investigation that they've been engaged in for some time, presumably commissioned by Alan Shatter, because the minister is the only person who can commission them to do work, long before the Gurran report was thought of or published.
Okay.
So it does seem that there's a gap there in terms of the systemic scrutiny, and the idea that that's been given to a body that is manifestly in law not independent is a concern.
It's a difficulty for you. John Mooney, John, you're welcome as always to the programme. If I could just go back and talk about the whistleblowers in relation to Piers Doherty and so on today, because I suppose at the moment there is a gap as to where whistleblowers can go within an Garda Síochána if they have something to complain about or an issue to make. What do you think of giving GSOC that role?
I think there are a number of serious issues arising from the state's response to all of this. And I think there's a real danger, which is becoming clear to people who maybe have knowledge of these matters and maybe some of the background information on them in what's happening. For example, GSOC do a certain type of job. There's a guard in whatever unit or whatever county in the state, and they may feel that maybe some of their colleagues are corrupt or there's something going on like that. GSOC sure can take that allegation, but I can tell you now categorically they do not have the ability to investigate that type of activity. In other words, it's to catch maybe a guard who's involved in drug dealing or something like that.
They don't have the powers, or they simply don't have
the
abilities?
No, they just wouldn't have the ability, right, and they wouldn't have the wherewithal and wouldn't be involved in that type of operation. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the Gurran report is being held up as a kind of parameter of something that is a definitive piece of work. It should be stated that it's not. On a personal level, reading through it, I have grave reservations about some of the facts that it's after finding. For example, it looked at 10 cases that Maurice McCabe, allegations that Maurice McCabe made, but Maurice McCabe actually made in excess of 40 allegations to the Internal Guard Inquiry. The Internal Guard Inquiries have been quite criticised in the Gurran report, but what the public don't know is that many of the allegations that were invested by the guards were actually upheld. They took appropriate action on some of the other ones that weren't mentioned in the Gurran report, such as sexual harassment of young officers who were fully supported and dealt with. They didn't find, in terms of some of the allegations that Maurice McCabe, but it's far from a very, very clear picture. Yet, although Sean Gurran has stated that he makes no findings of evidence, everyone believes that this report has. And that's led to a situation whereby, while there is certainly, and it's without doubt, that there's problems, and I've been involved in highlighting these for a long time, that there's absolute failings on the part of management to enforce disciplinary. It was in some cases, that's not an excuse, but it's not an overall basis that Internal Guard inquiries led to nothing, were all a big cover-up. I can tell you categorically that's not the case. That, and I think this is going to become an issue in this commission. For example, Maurice McCabe was interviewed, yet guard allegations against officers who featured in this report were not given the opportunity to respond to that. So I'm not so sure a judge is going to sit back and accept these findings as maybe simply as everyone believes. That's one thing.
But the judge is starting from scratch, presumably.
Yes, but at the moment there's an impression created that, for example, the Internal Guard inquiries by Derek Byrne Terry McGinn and people like that, that they're all flawed, that they're all wrong. It's only it's less than 25% of what he examined. Mm-hmm. And I am aware of the findings of the other investigations, and they totally contradict sort of this general impression that's been created. And I think that's important for people like myself to point these issues out. The other matter is that I'm seeing at the moment is that you've got a situation whereby there's a lot of information now coming into the public domain concerning Garda officers. Now, I'm not here to speak for the force, and I've been involved in quite serious investigations of corruption and collusion and all that within the force. But all of what's entering the public domain at the moment is largely going untested. For example, Pierce Doherty stood up in the Dáil, used privilege and made a number of statements concerning a Garda officer from the North West Division. I'm not so sure he'll be maintaining that position in the morning.
Well, he said in his part of his speech to the Dáil today that he wasn't, he made it very clear, he wasn't in a position to say whether or not these claims
are true or not.
Well,
then why introduce it into the public domain?
But he says he has a responsibility to bring it to the Dáil.
Well, that is a, but that is kind of the number, the problem. Insofar as I'm aware, there are TDs now making, sending in letters, making all sorts of allegations about Garda officers and stuff. And you don't know the truth of this. For example, I was astonished at the Justice Committee hearings where a doctor stood up and said that there was someone who was had, I suppose, intellectual difficulties, was stripped and whipped. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that's a very serious allegation. I don't know whether it happened or not. But I haven't seen any evidence to suggest it happened.
Well, it's an interesting point, and it's one Pat Rabbit was talking about earlier this evening, I think, on Drive Time, and he wondered as well whether the Dáil is the right place for these allegations to be aired.
I don't think the floor of Dáil Éireann is the place to keep advancing the latest particular allegation. There's a suite of measures in place now for which the new Minister for Justice got the sanction of government. And that's the place to put these various allegations.
Do you agree with that, Mark?
Well, I think we certainly could be heading towards a situation where every deputy is seeking a whistleblower to announce to the Dáil, and that certainly wouldn't be positive. Today, I think, probably does mark the end of the beginning of a recognition by government that there's a need really for profound and systemic reform. But the difficulty is, and I think this is why there is this tendency still for deputies to bring packets of information that have been given to them to the floor of the House, that we're still not seeing a systematic and a systemic response to the systematic and systemic problems. We're still waiting the findings of the Cook report. We're waiting for the Fennelly report. A new judge, presumably now, will be appointed with terms of reference to look into to Gurren. What's going to happen if someone does present another very credible whistleblower? Will an additional judge be put in place? So, you know, we've been saying from the very beginning, back in February when the GSOC bugging allegations first broke, that there's a need to put in place a comprehensive inquiry with terms of reference that are capable of looking at the broad spectrum of accountability issues that have arisen. The government has said now that it's going to reflect in a good deal more detail on what the terms of reference of the post-Gurren inquiry should be. And we would strongly urge that they are comprehensive and actually do go to the heart of some of the
matters. And back to that point, John Mooney, I mean, it is very messy, isn't it? Because if, as John Redmond said, Garda officers simply don't trust GSOC to handle the complaints for whatever reason, then where else is someone to go at the moment other than the public representative?
You see, in many ways, Garda management have led themselves into this situation by, and it's for a variety of reasons that we are where we are. You had a succession. It's easy, and I'm not a fan of Martin Callanan, but it is very easy to blame Martin Callanan and all of this. His predecessors, I would argue, going back to Noel Conroy and Faulkner Murphy, there was a hands-off approach to any problem, and no one wanted to know. And that ended up in a situation where a certain type of person was being promoted to senior Garda management up the ranks, that when problems arose, there wasn't a proper response to them, and it became kind of almost like a code where you don't deal with these issues unless you really have to. Hence we saw various crises dragging on for years, and problems would get worse as time went on. But I have to say, and I feel obliged as someone who was in the Morris Tribunal, I was a witness in it, and I dealt with a lot of this kind of really, really serious deep-rooted corruption and the failure of Garda management to deal with it on occasion, that the part of me feels that we're in danger of throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because I think now it's reached a situation. I get all of this on the phone every day. I couldn't repeat the number of people that are contacting me with allegations about the guards, and at least 90% of it is a complete load of nonsense that I know by what they're saying to me is wrong. And I think Mark is very, very correct in what he's saying, that we're ending up in a situation where does TDs see political capital in this? And there are more, and I can tell you now, or I suspect quite strongly, are going to possibly realise to their own detriment that running forward and then using Dáil privilege to release information and names may turn out to haunt them at a later date. And I think that's a very dangerous, that when you have this sort of this political kudos in attacking the police, rather than sort of looking at genuine reform and how we can do this properly to stop this sort of nonsense. Like, police corruption in this country has been a cyclical event really for the last 30 years. And it was, again, and I could, it's like rewriting the script for Morris again. When Morris broke, I remember I was involved in all of that with McBrearty family, yeah. The other allegations that came forward. And no one wanted to know at the time. There was an internal investigation set up, Kevin Carty. He had allegations made against him. His reputation was destroyed at one stage. You had superintendents, inspectors who went up and did the internal inquiry, being lambasted and criticised at every front. There was two TDs stood up on the Dáil and made reference to quite serious allegations against high-ranking officers, which was Carty himself and Tony Hickey, who were completely exonerated at the end of it. And you had this scenario where then by some of the guards whom there was wrongdoing found against ended up in kind of bizarre scenarios where they were being treated as very credible people and making pronunciations on the force and everything else. And it took 6 or 7 years of tribunal reports to get to the nub of this, that Garda management hadn't taken the proper approach to this when it was highlighted, and the internal investigations, contrary to the notion, and I don't like guards investigating guards either, but not every internal investigation is a sham or a whitewash or whatever. Yeah. And they were making recommendations. These were being ignored. And again, a failure of management and the Department of Justice to grapple these issues. So I think there's a very dangerous situation going on at the moment, because I think people are willing to believe anything, even though they're unsubstantiated allegations. As a journalist, I'm very interested in evidence. I like to know the names of the people. I like to know what their motivations are. Who are these people? Who were these matters reported to? If someone's making an allegation that there was some serious assault or something like that happened or whatever, who did they report it to? Who did they log it with? Was a solicitor involved? I like to know these things. But in all these allegations that are coming out at the moment, I haven't seen much of that. I haven't seen much evidence. Okay. There are problems in the guards. There's guards involved in criminality, drug dealing, all sorts of stuff. I've raised them, and other journalists have exposed this stuff as well. But I do think that we have to be very, very careful about creating the impression that we've a bent police force, because we don't.
Sure. John Redmond, what do you agree with much of what John has just said there about it's particularly the role of management in the Garda Síochána, that they are to blame for a lot of this?
Well, there's a couple of things, and I suppose you couldn't but agree that where investigations have been carried out, and as John said, not all of them have been whitewashes or have been, circling the wagon type results out of them. Most definitely, somebody at a very senior level in management made a decision not to deal with the issues that were identified on more than one occasion. This isn't just a once-off. I'm not talking about the current situation. I'm talking about historically. So somebody at the very top level of the Garda organisation said, look, I'm not going out on this, or not on my watch. I don't want to be the one tarred with this. I don't want to be the one that's vilified in public. But there's very, very senior level failings. On the other hand, we have, and not to say that every guard, every sergeant or inspector in the whole Garda organisation traditionally has been a saint. Of course, there have been complaints made and some complaints have been upheld. But these people, by and large, are working very, very hard in very difficult circumstances to provide a police service. And they are as frustrated as the public are from the outside looking in. They're on the inside looking up and they see the problems and the concerns that they have. And they know in their heart and soul that if they raise those, that's the end of their careers. And that's the unfortunate part. And we're looking forward to a Garda authority. We're looking forward to, as the minister says, the brush that's going to sweep a little bit cleaner at least and put some structures in place that's going to make it okay for these people to raise up their heads and throw back their shoulders.
And John, as an officer at your level, Maurice McCabe's a sergeant as well. I mean, what is the feeling among colleagues when someone like Maurice McCabe or someone else does blow the whistle, does make complaints? I mean, do you support them or do you isolate them?
Well, as the association, I speak on behalf of the association. Our remit is to deal with conditions and welfare of members. In our view, anybody, and it doesn't just not just about whistleblowing or somebody making a complaint, anybody who has an issue that's causing him or her stress or distress or anxiety, if it's to do with the job or even outside the job, we try to help them. Okay, so that's the first thing. So we would support anybody who's a member of our association in dealing with whatever ailments they have, we'll say. Of course, there's widespread support for the idea that somebody should be able to make a complaint if they feel that they have an issue that they should, that they want to complain about. And we would support anybody who does that 100%.
But when it actually happens, is the instinct they're a traitor?
Oh, absolutely not. No, no. But I mean, you'd be blind to say that you hadn't seen the images that have been reported in the newspapers about, and Maurice McCabe himself came out about Facebook and a targeted photograph with him tagged in it, you know. Mm-hmm. Very, very difficult for a person who is trying to do the right thing. And we certainly wouldn't condone any behaviour like that. And that's outrageous behaviour and we certainly wouldn't stand over it.
But it happens. I mean, obviously it happens.
Well, it's reported as happening. I mean, you know, and the deputy at the committee yesterday said the same thing. You know, he said this has happened. And, you know, for individuals, do that. And they shouldn't do it. And it's not right and it's not acceptable. But by and large, the association certainly would support absolutely somebody who makes a complaint.
Yeah, but Audrey, you see, people look at the guards as being this big unified organisation inhabited by people who all think the same and act the same, and it's not. I know police officers who've raised wrongdoing and everyone they've worked with has got right behind them in the face of all sorts of hassle and supported them. And then, like, I mean, Ballybor is one issue and there's lots of different things going on in the back of that that aren't in the public domain yet. So you have to bear... But this is human nature. So the guards aren't sort of like stormtroopers that don't look the same and act the same and follow orders. You get different personalities, different reactions and different, I suppose, approaches to dealing with management problems like you do in any other big organisation. Think the problem, and I go back to what Mark is saying, is that what the guards need is the proper systems that are in to change the culture, that there's a kind of more streamlined and uniform approach to dealing with this rather than it being left to whatever person happens to be making the decision on that. Because, again, real big problem with Garda management at the moment is that I'm looking at the current situation and what's happening, and I can tell you now you have a top couple of layers of management, and it reminds me of Game of Thrones. They're all saying there's opportunity in chaos, And people are looking at how we could possibly benefit from that. So you're getting no sort of harmonised approach to how can we deal with this and take ourselves out of this. Instead, there's lots of different promotion availabilities and positions popping up. And that's what people are primarily looking at. So they're avoiding having their name implicated in anything should it damage their career potentials at a future date. And anyone who says that's not the case is lying through their teeth to you. And then you have, I suppose, a deep reluctance because of what's happening in the media and in the Dáil of where you're kind of maybe listening to issues being raised and that, I mean, not every guard who makes an allegation should be listened to. There are, you know, the real problem with GSOC taking in reports from guards is that you're going to have vexatious complaints being made about by officers who are maybe being put under pressure to do their job properly by a senior officer. And then suddenly there's an allegation. Another big problem within the guards is that. And I saw this back in Morris. And I feel as if there's a bit of, it's almost Groundhog Day again, is that someone who is making an allegation can have an impression of an operation and they'll believe that the motivations for decisions are being made on a certain basis and they might be completely unaware that there's two informants, that there's some other game going on that has been properly regulated and supervised and conducted in a very lawful way with a higher agenda in mind. And just because they don't know about it doesn't mean that they're right. Mm. And that, you know, they can derive certain conclusions about that and because they're not in an operational loop. For example, dealing with corruption in a police force is deadly. For the simple reason is, number one, you don't, in some cases, you don't know who's involved. So these operations, counter corruption operations, have to be kept very tight. So sometimes you can see a unit acting independently. They might be listening to phones. They're doing all these type of covert operations to get to the bottom of what's going on. Sometimes with the agenda of clearing people. Like, for example, there was allegations made by Luke Ming Flanagan. Concerning he made allegations of Gardaí being involved or having tacit involvement in drug dealing. Mm-hmm. And that information came in, I understand, to Garda management, and they weren't quite sure where it was happening. Now, I can absolutely reassure you in every way that there was a massive operation to find out whether there was a problem in a drug unit right across many different divisions. And that was done covertly, discreetly, and very effectively to see was there anything whatsoever showing up in terms of drug reports, records, arrests, etc., etc. Because
from is that ongoing or did they come to a conclusion on
it? I think, but at the time they weren't sure where these allegations were coming from, but they were auditing everything to make sure that, for example, you can imagine the problems that if you have guard, and because guard officers are being on a continual basis being suspended and disciplined on suspicion of working with people involved in heavy, serious drug trafficking. And my point is that, you know, it's like there's not. I think it's really wrong that people have an assumption that guards can do whatever the hell they want and no one will take action on it, even if their colleagues report them and stuff. That's not the case. Mm-hmm. What you've had and what we've seen in the last while is areas where, for a variety of reasons and circumstances and coincidences and everything else, matters weren't properly dealt with by management. But that shouldn't be there are huge problems in the guards. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that there isn't, but I do think, like, I mean, again, with GSOC don't have the ability to do serious investigations of police corruption.
Mark.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that is really the cardinal point. The Irish Council for Civil Liberties works closely with An Garda Síochána in a number of ways. And it's very clear to us that the vast majority of officers are highly professional and principled, and they're doing a difficult job that most people don't want to do or would be terrified to do if they had the chance. And professional officers actually welcome enhanced accountability. We heard John Redmond welcoming the minister's comments this afternoon on the Garda Authority, for example. And similarly, on the enhancement of the powers of GSOC, the representative associations, the GRA and the AGSI and others, for years have been saying that it's their preference that GSOC should be able to investigate and should investigate every single complaint against a member of An Garda Síochána. And it's in fact been GSOC which has very gradually over time moved towards an acceptance of that. It's only a couple of years ago that the ICCL was actively advocating against a proposal that GSOC was making that the Garda Act should be amended to give it increased possibilities to lease back investigations to guards themselves. Mm-hmm. And the representative associations were strongly against that. So good officers welcome accountability. I do want to be fair as well, Audrey, to the minister, because there was a great deal that she said this afternoon in the Dáil that was good. And the tone in which it was said was refreshing, I thought as well. I mean, in particular on the GSOC powers, we know that GSOC have already been given now unrestricted access to Pulse. That's a step forward. They actually have terminals in their offices now, the Dáil was told. Francis Fitzgerald this afternoon gave an indication of the direction of travel in terms of GSOC reform. And I think essentially, every single thing that the ICCL argued yesterday before the Justice Committee should happen, she indicated in principle she was open to. There'll be a power to investigate the Garda Commissioner. There'll be a change to Section 106. And this comes back to this looking into systemic matters that we were talking about before. At the moment, the GSOC can only look into practices, policies and procedures with the permission of the Minister for Justice. So it's the same as the inspectorate, basically, mm-hmm. where that's concerned. And it seems that there's an acceptance now that that should be changed. GSOC should have the power to do that on its own initiative. Okay. And the Garda Authority, we had a very good exchange of views at the Justice Committee about that, and it's clear that that's been taken very seriously. And the minister again this afternoon is stressing that her timeline for that is the end of this year. She's saying it's ambitious, but that she's very committed to it, and she thinks that it can be done. The problem is, and this is the piece that we're having real difficulty, is how do we get from here to there? You know, at the end of the year is a very ambitious target, but even if we did see a Garda Authority within that period of time, the end of the year is a long time away from where we are at the moment. And there are lots of things that could happen in the meantime, lots of new allegations, spurious or otherwise, that could come to light. Our concern as a human rights organisation in this situation is that the public trust in the effectiveness and efficiency of policing is undermined, and public trust in the effectiveness and efficiency of investigations of complaints against the police is undermined. And something of a more urgent nature needs to be done about that, pending the enactment of measures that will address it in a legislative sense.
That's completely correct. I mean, if you look at sort of, and we're discussing this outside, the type of reports that are already in the public domain. Forget about Geerán. Look at the Smith findings of the Smithwick Tribunal. Mm-hmm. Garda officers colluding with the Provisional IRA to murder police officers. And I can go on. And I mean, this, you know, it can't help you. It's important to point out that many of these issues prior to Geerán, like I have to say, on a personal level, I look at the allegations that are contained in the Geerán report as being on the overall scale of things that have been alleged to be on the kind of lesser scale. You have murders in Smithwick. You have, you've had the Boylan affair. You can go through sort of the various incidents highlighted in Morris, etc. And, one interesting thing about Morris is no one went to prison for Morris. Not one.
I think, and you know, to listen to what's being said, and you couldn't help but agree with an awful lot of it. But Mark's point is very clear. and something that we agree with. 15 years ago, the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors sought the creation of a policing authority in Ireland, the same as was applicable in our nearest neighbours. Mm-hmm. And it was ignored until now. And you think it was after falling from the sky now that suddenly this is something that's the best idea, you know, since fried bread. The balance has to be struck between creating something and going around with buckets of sand to throw them on the fires as they break out, and actually yoking up a hose and hosing the fire. And that's something that we have to be aware of, and the minister should be aware of as well.
I can't keep up with all the metaphors.
But he speaks with... anyway, the issue is that you have to, even to create something on a temporary basis, as Mark says, and look at the permanent solution then. But here's the thing. You have the Garda Síochána Ombudsman Commission. You have the Garda inspectors. You have within the Garda organisation, you have a new, relatively new unit called the Professional Standards Unit. Mm-hmm. You have the Internal Affairs, an internal audit unit in the Garda organisation. Now, is there any scope for looking at whether all those units can be amalgamated into one group? Mm. And as a whole, they would look at issues that came in and decide whether it's a GSOC issue, an inspectorate issue, a professional standards unit issue, and then divvy up, because as John rightly says, GSOC haven't the capability, even though they have all Garda powers, the powers that any Garda has, but they haven't the capability to go in depth investigations and inquiries into policing matters. Do you know? And you can't have, and you shouldn't have GSOC carrying out an inquiry here and the inspectors carrying out a similar inquiry there. And both small groups carrying out virtually the same work.
Okay. You know. We have to take a break, but we will continue this discussion in a minute. RTE Radio 1. And you're welcome back to the programme. With me in studio tonight, John Redmond, General Secretary of the AGSI, John Mooney from the Sunday Times, and Mark Kelly, Director of the Irish Council of Civil Liberties. We've 10 minutes left on the programme. Mark, what is the authority, the independent authority's role going to be?
Well, that's not yet entirely clear. There was an interesting paper produced by Deputy Anne Ferris and Senator Ivana Bacik and others a short while ago, a kind of scoping paper in a way for the government. And it looked at two main models, the Northern Irish model, which is quite a political one, but politically balanced, kind of on the De Hoint principle, similar to the Stormont Assembly. And the other one that they looked at was my home country, Scotland, which has a different approach, where the members of the authority are not political, though some of them are in fact former politicians. So the composition of the authority is still something that is being looked at and has to be determined. I don't think we should have a carbon copy of what they have in Northern Ireland. It needs to be adapted to our legislation and to the particular situation here. But the cardinal thing that needs to be done is to undo the damage that was done in the Garda Act 2005, when our police service was effectively made politically directly accountable to the minister. Mm. And we've seen that with the minister and the Garda commissioner effectively locked into almost a dance of death politically in recent weeks and months. That link needs to be
And will the
broken.
Creation of the authority break that link?
Yes, that's exactly what the authority will do. And it will, for example, at a minimum, appoint, and it may dismiss, the Garda commissioner. It will take away from political control the promotion of people above the rank of superintendent,
which remains
a politicised process. But it will do other things. It will sit down with the Garda commissioner and it will work out what are the policing priorities for the coming period, come up with a policing plan, set performance indicators. And we've seen this done. It's done effectively in Northern Ireland. It's done in Scotland. The experience is quite new, but it seems to be developing in a very positive way. But what it will do is it will change the situation where the minister is effectively a political shield for the Garda commissioner or vice versa by interposing something that the ICCL has been calling for a long time, which is a form of civic oversight.
And it will be truly independent. It won't be politically appointed in any shape or form.
No, I mean, I think that's the absolute bare minimum that it has to be. And there was absolute consensus before the Justice Committee yesterday on that point, and I think the Minister tacitly accepted that in her speech to the Dáil this afternoon.
John, do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Justice Ministers, for the past, for as long as I've been reporting on these issues, senior Gardaí try to work out a strategy where they impress justice ministers and civil servants on the basis that they will support their candidacy for senior positions. And I can tell you now, senior politicians have interfered in that process to get people promoted. I have to say, one of the most corrupting things in the force is actually the promotion system. It relies on who you're friendly with, who you're willing to suck up to, do you play GAA, do you come from such and such a town, are you friendly with that guy, are you married to such and such a fella's daughter, and it's based on that. You get a lot of really, really good detectives, good Gardaí, who are out there doing a very, very tough job, an honest job, and totally overlooked for promotion because they don't look the right way or speak the right
and
way.
And I think we can hear Enda Kenny on this now. He was asked about this when he was visiting Wicklow a little earlier this afternoon. He was asked if all future appointments within the justice system should be free of politics.
Obviously, the government has made a clear decision here to move to a statutory and independent authority, and that has to be independent, and it has to be able to do its work and be seen to be independent. So I think that's certainly going to go a long way to deal with that particular comment. Former Minister Shatter was looking at the question of the whole process of judicial appointments, the judicial board. We have discussions with the judiciary in the appropriate fashion about that later. It's something that I think is necessary to consider in the context of a sea change, all of these things that are so important for our democracy and for the integrity of the way the administration of justice applies should be seen to be, you know, absolutely clear of any political connection at all.
Do you think it will happen, John?
I'll wait and see. The Department of Justice and the various ministers of the day have been pretty content with the system that's been there because it suited them, it gave them political cover, and vice versa. And it really brought about the situation that this country finds itself in at the moment, insofar as that you've seen your Gardaí trying to second guess what a minister wants them to do and what a senior civil servant wants them to do. And both sides of that relationship, none of them wanted problems.
And John Redmond, you were saying there that, you know, the creation of a policing authority was something that your organisation has been pushing for many, many years. And yet Fine Gael were never fans of it until now.
Well, I suppose Fine Gael have only recently come into power after a long number of years out in the cold. So maybe they've seen the light in light of being in the position that they're in now. And maybe that has changed their mind a little bit on it. But the reality is you can only put away and ignore stuff for a certain length of time, and sure, a blind man would see what's going on at the moment. The other important thing is with regard to promotions and promotion systems. It's very difficult to have a promotion system that's agreeable and acceptable to everybody. And we managed to get introduced, the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors managed to have a revamp of the promotion system some years ago. In the recent past, where the Garda involvement would be as a person on the board, but the chairman of the board or the chairperson of the board would be a civilian. And in the hope that that would work a little bit better, the sad reality is it doesn't seem to have done that. And, you know, you only have to look at the Minister Shatter's interaction with Mick Wallace on the primetime programme with regard to Deputy Wallace being stopped at traffic lights. And how did the minister find that out? You know, let's be realistic about it. It wouldn't be surprising to think that on a daily basis, the minister and the commissioner of the day would be in conversation over the phone about what's, you know, for
national
whatever
security
reason.
Or whatever,
you know, and it might be national security. It might be the likes of that. Sure, what do you think of your man? Do you know? And that's not acceptable and shouldn't be acceptable in a modern policing organisation. And on that basis alone, the policing authority should have been in place for years and years.
Mark?
Yeah, just in terms of your question about driving it and will it actually happen, one of the other interesting things the minister said this afternoon is all of this reform work is going to be overseen by the new cabinet committee on justice reform. And there are five people on that: the Taoiseach, the Tánaiste, the Minister for Communications, Energy and Natural Resources, Pat Rabbit, the Minister for Justice, and the Attorney General also attends. And it's actually quite interesting when you look at the composition of that, because you have two Fine Gael politicians and you have three people who are either Labour politicians or appointed by the Labour Party to the position of Attorney General. So, I mean, I think that's a signal that this is seen now, I hope, as a whole of government responsibility, and that it's not just about Fine Gael with its largest number of TDs in the Dáil doing what it likes, but also maybe this is the time politically for Labour to step up to the plate.
Tom has texted. John, I'll put his text to you. Listening to all this makes one realise what a snake pit Alan Shatter stepped into when he took on the justice portfolio. Yes, he made mistakes, but he was clearly fighting an uphill battle from day one. Do you have any sympathy for that?
No, Alan Shatter fitted into that snake pit very well and was more than happy to ignore reports that were delivered onto his desk and take no action whatsoever on them. And I think the fact that the comments that he made about Mick Wallace and that, and any other functioning democracy, if a Minister for Justice came out with information that, just to explain this to you, there's no way Martin Callanan should have even known about minor traffic infringement down in the North Intercity involving a Dáil TD. That was the problem. He fitted into that and was using, and I would argue abusing, as the position he was in to gather get information on his political opponents. But the worst bit about all of that was the fact that the Garda Commissioner was in on it. And this, this is where this is all wrong, you know.
Here's the question: if you think about that for a minute, who told the Garda Commissioner this?
And
it's back to the point you mentioned. Why did this person tell the Commissioner? Yeah. And there's no doubt in my mind
they thought they'd curry favour with
the Commissioner by doing that.
Yeah.
Here, I have something for you, you know.
Yeah.
So a new broom? Are we at the start of a new broom?
I hope so. We look forward to that.
Okay. And do you have confidence in the new minister? Because I know...
Of course, absolutely. I'm very encouraged by what the minister is saying and the way she's going about her business. And also, Interim Commissioner O'Sullivan seems to be adopting a certain attitude as well. And we're delighted to see that kind of attitude, portrayed.
Okay. Well, look, thank you all very much indeed for coming in and talking to us tonight. John Redmond, John Mooney and Mark Kelly. Late Debate is back next Tuesday night, usual time, 10 o'clock. Till then, from all of us, have a lovely weekend.